And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's March 22nd. Thank you, Brother Bob Marley, man. The right spirit to envision us and enlighten us and spur us on at this time of apparent darkness. I have two wonderful guests with me today, Deborah Golding and Brenda Everall, two women warriors who are going to be on the air with me in just few seconds, but first I wanted to read to you an inspiring quote from our brother Frederick Douglass. He was the one who led the abolitionist movement in America. Find out just what people will submit to, and you have found the exact amount of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them, and these will continue until they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. Let me repeat that. The limits of tyrants are prescribed or determined by the endurance of those whom they oppress. Well, we're not enduring this police state they're imposing on us, folks. It has nothing to do with a virus that in 80% of the infection cases have mild responses. No, the enemy isn't a virus. It's fear. It's fear that's being institutionalized at every level. And we're going to talk about that today, not only what we do in response to the encroaching police state, because there's a lot of lessons we've learned of how you counter these criminals in power. You start in your own mind by not giving in to fear. We're going to look into the mass psychology of how that happens and how we can fight it on an individual level among our families and as whole communities. We're here all the time. Now, don't forget that as part of the campaign to shut down really any dissent, there will be undoubtedly an effort to shut down the internet. If this show is canceled, if our YouTube shows are canceled, be sure to stay in touch with us through ITCCS office at protonmail.com or through the other means you can see at murderbydecree.com. But we'll get into that. Let me welcome Deborah first of all. Hi, Deb.
Hi. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm fantastic, and it's good to have you back. We're going to continue on our discussion from last week, and I'm excited about this because it's a way to get outside the paradigm that's set up of, you know, a problem is created and then the people who create the problem step in with the so-called solution and we're all supposed to play games and play the game and go along with it. They seem to be creating the basis for a real panic everywhere as they deliberately collapse their own society. And I want to ask, you know, if you've been reflecting on this over the last week, how we respond to this personally and in other ways.
You know, I think you've really set it up there, framed it really well, because it was exactly how I've been looking at it as almost a playing field, like it is a game. So it's the desire is actually to create this playing field, you know, like football field or soccer field is kind of how I'm seeing it. And they've written the playbook. It's and so because of certain traits that have been witnessed that, you know, as we humans respond, then you can run particular scenarios and pretty much anticipate how to actually anticipate what we're going to do. I mean, we've got if we step into and continue with a reactive nature, it's pretty easy to corral the herd and keep us in that mentality. And so where the anomalies happen, where the parts that can't really be tracked is when people choose something different. So, you know, that unknown factor, it's like we're these wild cards. And, you know, if you can systematically get rid of the wild cards out of the deck, then it's easier to play the numbers. Then it's easier to pretty much predict what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, and so these scenarios are being run, and you can actually step back and look and see what they are. I mean, we're offering so much data by our reactions.
And here's the thing I find interesting. They're the actions of the state, and this is a global campaign, as anyone with two eyes can see at this point, right? The coordinated effort to create an impression that there's this epidemic starting, even though it's a virus not as lethal as a normal flu virus. But they're doing it with such quickness. There's obviously a timeline they have, and that's a sign of weakness. And that's the first thing Sun Tzu says in The Art of War. You can tell by your opponent how desperate they are, whether or not they're weak. And they are acting out of a place of weakness. That's why they need everybody to comply immediately. And the minute we stop complying, first at an intellectual level, at just thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. I'm not going to go along with this. There's no great threat. Then you start slowing down their wheel of repression. And, you know, one example of that was, and this was really funny last week, Canada did not automatically quarantine anyone coming into the country. They said, just voluntarily quarantine yourself. And yet at the same time, they're banning public meetings. Like, that doesn't make any sense, because if you're going to go so far as to ban a public meeting and not have people interact, why wouldn't you quarantine people coming into the country? So that's what I mean about it's a lie. And as somebody said to me the other day, well, as an Indian, I've been going through this my whole life. They can they can inject us with whatever they want under the Indian Act. They pen us in on reservations. We can't move around without government authority. You guys are just all in the reservation now. And I actually found a really good quote that from a woman I knew, still know. Her name is Lillian Shirt. She's a Cree woman in Edmonton. And she once told me, this is what she said. My great-grandfather, Wandering Spirit, saw in a vision many iron fences falling across the land, and in them all our people were held as slaves. He said this to his son, and he said that one day the same cages would hold the white people too. Right? Yeah. And only if we walk into them, and that's the point. We're not going to walk into them in our own mind. And when I bring up, I know Brenda's coming on at 20 after, and she's an activist on the ground who's, you know, has been trying for a while to set up this new common law jurisdiction that people can opt out of the system into. And I often say, well, you know, folks, we've been saying for 5 years now, we've got to step away from this allegiance to the status quo and operate under a new jurisdiction. Now people see why we have to. And, you know, so we're going to talk a little bit about that with her. But I want to ask you, too, about this whole mass psychology of, you know, how fear gets entrenched. Like, there seems to be three stages. You create a crisis where everyone's in a panic through a big lie. And this is clearly a big lie going on. And Hitler said, you only tell big lies. It's the only ones that the masses are willing to believe, because it forces people to suspend their own natural judgment. The second part is you respond with absolute repression, control everybody's movement and communications, because they've already walked into their jurisdiction and agreed with everything. And finally, you institutionalize the new regime, and nobody can remember what the old one was like. And so we're going through those three steps, but it starts mentally. It starts in our own minds. And so I wanted your thoughts about that before Brenda came on.
Well, I'm just thinking about how we've been... It's really easy to see how the conditioning of being reactive has been refined. If you think about devices that are that we use in daily lives, you know, how quickly you expect the computer to respond, your phone to respond, and other, we can all think of different aspects, but it is, we're expecting response, we're expecting reaction, we're expecting that, and then we are modeling that and respond in kind. So it's the action, reaction, and response, or, I mean, attention spans are really small. And so we are in a place, most people are in a place where they are very out of practice with not only breath, I mean, you know, but just even stopping and even inhaling for a moment, considering, and then making a choice. It's all reactive. It's knee-jerk. It's like, right. What is the first... you know, shoot that comes through you. And if it's coming from fear, or if it's coming from, you know, being defensive, or even laughter. I mean, you know, not that that's any of it's bad. It's just the action is so it's like the cylinders are firing faster and faster. And there's really no space for considering what exactly you are choosing into, or that you're refusing, or you're resisting, and all it does is it creates more reactions. And so then, you know, if you think about the way an engine's working, they're relying on this engine of reaction to propel
it's an automatic.
Itself into exactly.
It's an automatic reaction. It happens so easily because we're raised to think habitually, not critically. Mm-hmm. And people think they're thinking, but they're not, because they're reacting out of a habitual pattern set down in childhood, right?
Right.
And
right.
We don't understand how we've been conditioned. So we think we're being aware, but we're not. Critical thinking is
a
very difficult thing to
acquire. But even in the awareness, it is. It's a very difficult thing, because in order to step into that, it really does require a time. And I know for me, in my own experience, just really looking at myself, thinking, oh, you know, I'm being so efficient. Look how I multitask. I'm doing, and I'm so productive, but then I look at it and I think, wait a second, you know, on the times that I'm really getting myself exhausted and I'm starting to get bewildered, and this could be going on for weeks or months or hours, it doesn't matter, but what I end up doing when I finally just kind of take a breath and I look at myself, why am I so frustrated? How come the things I'm doing are not really producing results? I'm really trying and I'm working so hard, and I think, oh, wow, I am really expert at creating my own, what I call my own hamster wheel. I can step onto that hamster wheel or that treadmill and exert so much energy thinking I'm going and doing.
You're saying you're doing that because of your response to your own trauma in childhood.
Exactly.
And how you were,
exactly.
How you were tortured by the Mormons.
It does take, yeah, so it has taken some very real self-evaluation, self-introspection, and questioning my motives, questioning my assumptions, questioning my belief, questioning why it is that I think, and I was very much about this, is like, well, everybody else thinks this, I must be wrong. Even though inside, it was not sitting well with me. But the mob mentality, as I call it, you know, this the predominant mentality, it is so hard. What's going on right now that I've noticed in the area that I live is definitely this idea that if you have anybody that is doing something to support this, the isolation and everything like that, is being celebrated and way to go, way to support this. But if anybody else comes up and says, hey, you know what, would you guys like to go on a hike? Even though you can keep your distance, it's almost like, you know, oh my gosh, are you sure you want to do something like that? Because there's heresy in just an activity.
Well, you know, and I saw today in the store, they have a term now they use, aggressive social distancing. Now, the word aggressive is very intentional, aggression. It, in other words, it's their subliminal way of saying to you, if you don't follow the rules now, we will lock you up. There's the raised hand of the parent.
There will be an attack. Mm-hmm.
There will be a consequence.
Exactly.
Now, the point is, don't forget, they are never going to follow through on that. Even if one of us, and I know from experience, I've said to them, fine, throw me in jail. They never do, because they don't want to make an issue of it. It's just a threat. It's like the threat of a lawsuit. We have to go through that fire and say, fine, lock me up. I'm just exercising my normal rights. I'm not endangering anyone. You know, go screw yourself. And you can see at this point, they're too vulnerable right now to make an example and bring attention to the fact that there is resistance going on. So we have
even
to
in
resist.
Response especially to that. Exactly. Well, even in resistance, a friend of mine was in a grocery store, a very large store, and they had set up cones, like traffic cones, six feet apart from each other. And it's like, this is where, this is your place, you know? And at one point, somebody turned around to him and said, dude, you're too close, you know? And he was so aggravated at attacking this friend of mine, you know? And the friend of mine is like, well, call the cops, get security over here. I'm standing where what's designated. Right. You know, nobody came, but you know, so what you're saying, he didn't just, you know, kind of submit and say, oh yeah, let me submit to the bully. It was more like, hey, take a look around, you know, you can take a step too. It's fascinating what's going on with this aggression.
Well, it's, and Brenda's with us. I'm going to bring her on in 30 seconds, but I just wanted to also flag this, is that we are expected to internalize somebody else's psychosis. And there's a mass psychosis going on in society of fear. And I urge people to read Wilhelm Reich's book, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, because he goes into how this works and how you're expected to adopt the mainstream psychosis or you're considered crazy. So we're going to talk about ways of resisting that, primarily by holding on to our own sense of self. And I want you to mention about the earthquake in Salt Lake City, too. Jump in with that in a minute, but I want to bring Brenda on. Hi, Brenda.
Okay.
Hey, Kev. How's it going?
Well, we're doing good. How are things out there in Ontario?
Oh, just like everywhere else, I would imagine. Freedoms are quickly eroding.
Do you find people, Brenda, where you are, is everyone going along with it? Are people questioning it? What do you find?
Pretty much everyone around me in this area is convinced that they're going to die.
And, well, we are, actually. We're all going to die.
Well, yep, but they think it's going to be this moment, and they think you're the cause of it, and they're very scared of everyone around them here right now, so it's dangerous for people like us who know what's going on, because we just have no avenue to tell them, you know, what's really going on, because they're just so freaked out right now.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting, too, that I find when you try to talk to people on just a rational basis, like, well, there, you know, 19 deaths in Canada, how does that warrant the abolition of all civil liberties? And as a matter of fact, martial law, I saw a notice today that Parliament is reconvening to consider martial law methods, and these methods might continue for the next 32 weeks. That's 8 months, okay? So it's creating this kind of long-term, getting people used to the long-term police state. But you even say to people, well, this doesn't make sense, and you're seen as some kind of threat, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, and I'm several steps ahead in my planning where, you know, I can see the forced vaccinations coming and whatnot. So I'm just really trying to see ahead and get myself ready for that. You know, everybody's fighting over rations and stuff right now. And I'm looking way further down the road at, you know, this 5G coming at us and forced vaccinations. And, well, if you don't vaccinate, apprehended. And there's just going to be so many spiraling issues that unfold if we aren't able to come out of this quarantine and stand our ground as people.
Well, don't forget the quarantine is self-imposed at this point. And, you know, we've got to show people that there's another voice in the country that's saying this is all illegitimate. We are issuing a notice of liability that these forces are committing treason. They're acting at the behest of foreign powers. There's no basis. There's no threat to us. Even scientific evidence points to that fact. So calling on them to stand down and saying, we're going to hold you liable. A voice of opposition needs to be put out. So at least people can begin to rally around that voice, right? If you think you're alone, they want this whole thing about self-imposed isolation. That's a psychological category. The enslavement is in the mind first. We're supposed to hide in our homes. And that's where they want us, so that when the next repression happens, there won't be resistance. So we break that down at the start. We can't wait, like you're saying, right?
Exactly. I mean, they were doing this in China. They were pushing back like crazy. There was all kinds of social unrest and pushing back against the globalism that was settling in. Because they were the first place to do all this ID tracking and whatnot, and China, the Chinese people were telling us, you know, if this goes down, the rest of the world's in big trouble. And coincidentally, that was the first place that got hit, you know. So
right,
there's a lot being suppressed through this that the rest
absolutely
of the world.
And that's why people need to get off their internets, because don't forget, one of the measures in martial law, the first thing they do is put all communications under control. It's called the Emergency Communication Management System. And it means your internet, your emails, everything is controlled. It doesn't necessarily shut down, but what you see will be approved, you know, by the mega computer that's going to be monitoring everything. So we have to rely on each other. That's why, you know, maintaining contact with people and not retreating at our homes is essential. And anyway, Deb, what do you think of all it? Feel free to jump in.
Well, I'm actually just really curious about what she's doing to. You said you're preparing yourself for the forced vaccinations. What are you doing to do that? That's actually really fascinating to me and great information that I would love to see.
Well, it's
kind of,
you know,
spread.
Unorthodox. I'm just ready to bug out and go right into the woods if we have to. I don't. No one in my family will be getting this chip that's coming through the vaccine. It's no longer a conspiracy. It's out there. Actually, Derek from Occupy Canada, he recently spoke of this. He asked everybody to Google ID 2020. And he was the gentleman that set himself on fire the other day in Toronto after making a video that told us all about 5G and this the quarantining, how it's enslaving us. He shouted it all out, and 20 minutes after that video, he was dead. And he He was very vocal about what's coming. And the terms surrounding his death are very, very confusing. He said that, and then 20 minutes later, he was dead. So I think
what are they using as the cause of death, Brenda? What are they saying as the cause of death?
They said he set himself on fire and then stabbed himself.
Stab yourself after setting yourself on fire. Yeah, it's like, yeah, we've heard those
they
before.
Said he ran into a restaurant and grabbed a knife, and I'm still learning all the details myself, but what he had to say to the public was incredible. And that ID, I believe it will be coming through the vaccine. DARPA in the United States has been vocal about their role in developing this. They call it a firewall, so that this technology that goes inside your body knows how to respond to diseases. So they're working with a company called Absela, I believe they're called. Mm-hmm. And it's really nefarious, and there's just no way we're taking that vaccine. So I'm just preparing our medicines and clothes, and if we have to bug out, we will.
Now, tell us if there's if you can send us the links to the information. Brenda will post it at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates for people to
Kevin,
know.
So, Kevin, I'm curious. How does your work and the lessons about genocide relate to what we're in now, especially in light with, you know, everything that's going on? I mean, what can people do?
Well, it's like what Brenda's alluding to, that we're at the point now where this is a war. It's upon us. It's not an idea anymore. And for 5 years, we've been trying to set up a different jurisdiction in Canada so that we would have the common law sheriffs, we'd have the citizen militias, we'd have the common law courts that could counter this and say, no, this did not get off the ground. People like the idea of it, but nobody took the efforts. I know, Brenda, you tried to call meetings. We held meetings all over the country. People did not want to take the step of risking anything, and now they're going to pay the price for it because we don't have that on a very large scale. We have some of this locally in different pockets, and I'm not going to say where they are. There are safe houses. There are communities that are working in active resistance, and so there will be resistance on the ground, but it's not on the scale that we need. And for now, we need to preserve our people. So, you know, Brenda's suggesting that's exactly what we need to do. We need to go off the radar. We need to preserve ourselves and build up from the outside in. That's what you do when you're in a war. You use guerrilla war tactics, and this is what we need to do because we haven't built up the opposition enough at this point. I knew people. I actually got involved in politics for the first time in the 1970s after I met refugees. I was only 17, but I met refugees from the military coup in Chile. And I remember one group of people said they were students in the University of Valparaiso. They said, we saw the military coup coming 6 months before. We all went underground. We're the only ones who survived because everybody else had faith in the government of Salvador Allende. They said, he's going to protect us from the military. They're all dead now. We're the only ones who survived because we have the underground structure set up. And that's the situation we're in now. So I would really urge people to do exactly what Brenda's doing. Get out of the system. We have different ways to do that, and you know how to contact us. We can help you do that. But
it's
the general lesson...
No money or no medicine or food, to be taking care of yourself, no mainstream staples, is a very scary idea. But I've been forced to do it so long now, I know that we can do it. It's very possible.
Well, you're living from experience, like I am, that we've already been through this. We've been living under the boot ourselves over the years. We know what it's like to be locked up, to be attacked as an enemy of the state. So those of us who've been through it are not afraid of this. We know what we need to do, and we need to rally those who are more, you know, uncertain about this. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brenda, you know, what's beautiful about what you just said is that the very last thing he says, I know we can do this. And hearing that over and over and over, I mean, we all have our moments, our waves of, I know I can do it, and, oh, wow, this is bigger than I thought. You know, and so to have that interplay with each other and just where we can rally for each other, I mean, that was really inspiring for me. I don't know why. It wasn't like I was afraid or anything like that, but the way you said that was, I mean, I was right on board with you. It felt so powerful.
Because I know from experience and I know from faith that we really have this in us. Like, It's what we were built for, to be honest.
I agree. This is the one thing about Kevin and I were, you know, I think kind of from our conversation last week about our personal sovereignty and not, you know, how we can't surrender our humanity, you know, and realizing what that is, you know, when we, again, taking the pause and what is it that, you know, that makes us human? What's our humanity right there? You know, our ability to reason, our ability to have compassion and inspire each other and feel inspired and the virtue, and then actually down to choice. How is this going to play out? Well, it's going to play out in your mind, just like you're saying, we honor what's going on in our minds and our hearts, getting those two things lined up, because as we were speaking about last week, it's the inner and the outer. You've got to really refine and value what's going on inside of you, more so than just the reactive, more so than just like, this is what's in front of me, and fight or flight just pops in really fast. All of those hormones dump into your brain, and all of a sudden you're not really in partnership with your body the way you would be unless you were actually knowing how to calm yourself, you know. So,
and I'm really
being
hoping
in a place where you know
is going to help with that.
Pardon? Go ahead. Pardon, Brenna?
Really hoping the quarantine is going to help with that self-reflection, you know, everybody being holed up in their houses. Because my awakening actually came when I was forced to spend great deals of time alone. And then I got, you know, self-reflection and started to know myself. So I'm really hoping that that inner experience is going to start unfolding with all the people that are bored and in extreme fear, because fear and pain cause awakenings. So as bad as this seems right now, it might actually be a grand awakening for people.
I agree.
I would agree with you 100%.
This is a wake-up call. It's kind of like you need the shock sometimes to awaken from our lethargy. Repression, I think, when you look at history, repression is never the cause of what crushes the human soul. It's affluence. It's, you know, lassitude. It's going along with things to get along. That's what kills our spirit. This is going to bring it alive, you know, this war. And it's like you say, Brenda, an opportunity now.
I think so. I hope so.
Well,
and we have to keep shouting it out at this point, because people are receptive to the truth right now.
Tell me a little bit more about the brother who was killed, his name and what he was saying.
Derek Sorbell, S-O-R-B-E-L-L, I believe. He started Occupy Canada, and he's been a driving force for... just shouting it out, you know, shouting Native rights out and defending his people. And I don't know, you know, there's not much more to say about it, because, again, there's a lot of public brainwashing surrounding his death, because they think that he made that video and then went and killed himself, so they think he's just mentally ill.
Well,
but
of course,
we know there's ways that the government can take, you know, there's... I don't want to publicly conspiracy theorize here, but there's voice-to-skull technology. There are definitely ways that you can make these people behave in certain ways. So I don't know what happened to him, but I know that shortly before his death, he shouted out everything that people need to hear.
Well, that's what I wanted you to mention. The name of this company, what it is he was actually saying, or, you know, about what's going on.
They have an Occupy Canada website, and it's on Facebook, too. Now, the Occupy Canada on Facebook, I know, is kind of settled right now while they mourn. But the information is up there.
And he mentioned, what's the name of this company and the microchip in their planning?
Oh, the ID 2020. I Googled that myself, the website, and it's all up there. They want all your info to be electronic. And
so in other words, this whole health scare is really is a way to get in a regime of mandatory vaccination for everyone, which, by the way, was adopted in Denmark the other day. They brought in a law that now saying there are no exemptions. The state of Maine just did the same thing the other day. You cannot legally exempt yourself from vaccinations. So
no.
And the chips are in the vaccine.
You know, because I've seen so many people now claiming that they have autoimmune issues. and that they're very afraid of this COVID. Mm-hmm. Well, at the same time, you know, I knew darn well the vaccine inserts say if you have autoimmune issues, you shouldn't be vaccinated. So it's just so weird that these people now are so admitting that they have autoimmune diseases and they're afraid of COVID, but they don't even care that they have an autoimmune disease when they go get vaccinated, and that's a straight-up contradiction. Yeah. So they've effectively weakened their own systems by ignoring that contradiction, and now they're afraid of the result. It's such a nightmare when they get caught up in the medical system and they believe every word the doctors say, because they are literally putting themselves at risk now.
That falls back into the whole thing about just keeping your mind, like, really just instead of being reactive, you know, and the playing field is set up in a way that pretty much anticipates people's actions based on, you know, the scenarios that are rooted in fear and how they can just be reactive to it. And so then once you get into this and you don't know what's on the other side of it, you do look for a solution, and it's so relieving when somebody else shows up and saves it. You know, like, here we are, we're going to save the day. Here we are, the government. Here we are, the authority. Oh, yeah. Here we are, whatever. And that, it's counter to the mass mentality. It's counterintuitive to say, you're the authority, but we don't trust you. You know, okay, thank God.
You're raising a thing I wanted to get into, another aspect of this, and here's the thing. It said today in a public opinion poll, over half of Canadians, and I'm sure this same figure is true for Americans, cannot stay away from work much longer because it's going to seriously wreck their livelihood. And yet mm-hmm. the government is now talking about everything shut down for 8 months. Now, here's the first question. Why would a government deliberately destroy its own economy? Because they're creating the basis for a huge recession by shutting down businesses, keeping people away from work. Why would they do that deliberately? Two possible answers. One, they're doing it at the behest of a bigger power, and people have talked about, yeah, they're going to crash the North American economy so China can come and pick up the pieces. That's one theory. But the other is, at the level of mass psychology, you create such collapse and such panic where people are in such a desperate state that when, like you said, Brenda, somebody comes along with this, quote, solution, they say, okay, we'll start feeding you again and giving you enough to survive, but you all got to get chipped because you can't go to the stores without a microchip. And that's what they're saying in Denmark now. Like the Book of Revelation, you cannot buy or sell without the mark of the beast on your hand. And that's exactly what's happening. So this is apparent suicide and irrational behavior by the government is one of those two. It has to be. Because unless they've all gone crazy, which is also a possibility, I guess.
Well, I understand that there is a system waiting to be put in place called NACERA or GISERA. The NACERA was North American something, but I forget what the acronym is, but then it went to GISERA for global. And apparently back in the day, this bill was passed, the finances, you know, and it was all ready and set to go, and then it was never announced. But
well, again,
apparently it was passed.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Like, people have all sorts of theories that, and here's a disturbing element, too. Many people normally in opposition to the system are suddenly saying, no, this is a good thing. You see, this is how the government is identifying the bad guys in the system. And like there's a bill before Congress now. The Attorney General, Trump's Attorney General, is asking Congress to enact a law which will strip everybody of constitutional rights, allow them to be pre-arrested, that is, you know, thrown in prison for something they might do. In other words, abolish the Constitution. And people are saying, oh, well, that's a good thing. We need more of that because they're going to get the bad guys out of the system that way. But they don't understand how they're being manipulated by that. They're being asked to sign their own death warrant. And so many people are getting on board with this now. We want more repression. It's going to be good for us. I mean, talk about self-destructive infantile thinking, right?
So many people believe that Trump is, you know, a good guy just waiting for his moment. And that this Q that's always the QAnon. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's just another level of deception. They're keeping everybody happy, telling them that mass arrests are being made and this and that. And, you know, it's just another level of just settle down and relax. We're taking care of this. Meanwhile, nobody's taking care of anything.
Big Brother. I mean, you know, it's projecting our infantile need for a strong father figure to take care of us. And amazing that people keep falling for this. The laws that created concentration camps in Nazi Germany were called protective custody laws, where we have to lock you people up for your own good. There's no difference 75 years later, you know?
No. No, it's actually a repeat. I mean, the chip is just the same idea as show me your papers, and, you know, it's all just...
Oh, my gosh, for sure.
It's all just, you know, updated Nazism, really.
Well, the technology came from Nazi doctors brought over under Project Paperclip. We proved that they were experimenting on Indian kids to develop these chips in the 1960s in the Nanaimo Indian Hospital. And I wrote a play about that, but it got shut down twice because Canadians don't want to hear this stuff. Well, now they're going to pay the price for not wanting to hear it, right?
Well, they brought those doctors over to Utah as well. I mean, when I was younger, I was one of those test subjects as well. You know, also, there was drug testing that was going on with me with doctors that were definitely Nazis. So, I mean, there's a state full of social experimentation that is right, you know, in the United States, and it's an easy one to look at, and it's under a religious rule, and it's pretty freaking rich, too. I mean, it's got a lot of money in it, and it's also kind of in its own covertly power. But it's got, you know, the LDS Church has got temples located all over the globe, which can be their private centers. I mean, you don't just walk into them like you do a cathedral. You have to have an ID to get into those places, and they monitor who's going in and out. So, I mean, that, you know, what is acceptable is about having your papers is something that this particular society is very familiar with and very accepting of.
Okay, so in the next 15 minutes, let's talk about the whole thing of not only what people need to be doing now, because we are at war, all right? And the mentality in war is different than peacetime. And we have to start thinking differently. And let's talk about, Brenda, you began the conversation by saying, you know, what you plan to do. You know, we can look also at the difficulty people have of taking that first step of breaking the ice. They've got to see somebody else do it first. And that's what we've been trying to model for years. And there's a lot of people out there watching, but we've got to push them past the point of running back into their holes now into actually doing the opposite and reaching out and building grassroots resistance. And there's ways to do that, but I wondered what you both, your thoughts about any of that.
Well, first and foremost, I'm just most worried about the children because right now it's just chaotic everywhere. The courts are shut down, and what isn't shut down is, you know, secret. And anyone who wants to, I mean, children, their safe spaces, schools, and after-school programs and this and that, if they're experiencing abuse at home. So some, you know, might be experiencing heightened abuse, and other people might see that and feel that they need to call CAS. I'm just urging people to think about different ways to handle these situations now. If those kids get caught up in this system with no functioning courts, it could be a real nightmare for those kids. So I'm just really urging everyone right now to maybe do some community block stuff for child protection.
Right.
If you do feel compelled to call a child protection agency, maybe report the same concerns to an advocate so that there's double layers, somebody else looking out for this kid. But we through all the pandemics in the world, we always see after the fact that scores of children went missing.
So that's the whole point of them in a way.
So that's my primary concern right now, is taking care of my family and our immediate needs and protecting the children and otherwise vulnerable in the community any way that, you know, we can. We've never had to do this before, so it's thinking with compassion and common sense, but doing what it takes to protect the people of the community.
Well, the block committee idea is a really good one because they already exist. We got to not reinvent the wheel. There's block watch committees all over the country and in America as well. And these are people that are designated in each neighborhood to watch out and protect kids and watch out for suspicious activities. We approach those groups that already exist and say, we want to work with you. We're a common law movement under the Republic of Canada, a different jurisdiction. We want to protect people on the ground. And so in America, you can go to the county sheriffs and say, look, you have an obligation to protect the community, right? You've got to make those appeals. What do you think, Deb?
I think that is probably one of the best, as I'm listening to that, that's one of the best, I don't want to say angles, but one of the most appealing ways that you can unite people. Because in all honesty, if with the court systems, you know, not functioning or things not functioning the way we would normally default into them, it now becomes our responsibility, really. Like, I'm going to call Department of, you know, Child Services, really? I mean, are they even in the office? Can they come in because of the, you know, it's like, that's almost a waste of time. So why is it that we as responsible, caring neighbors, who we can really see, come together and say, this is happening and this is what we need to do and the children are very important? That will knit people together really fast. And it will also give people a sense of mattering, of duty, of belonging, of togetherness, that they don't even have to be like, you know, they can be their 6 feet away from each other or whatever, but they can also be vigilant in looking at what is going on around them, you know, just what is going
on. Excellent.
I really like that being brought up, because I'm not necessarily going to, I mean, the sheriff may be very busy, especially since there was an earthquake out here in Salt Lake City just recently, and, you know, all of the first responders had to respond to a natural disaster. And that leaves things wide open for a vacancy.
I hear the angel lost his trumpet.
Oh, yes, did happen. The Salt Lake City Temple, they're doing renovations on a number of the original first-built temples, and one of them is the one in Salt Lake City. And that 5.7 came through, and the statue, if you want to, like, Google it or whatever, it's called the statue Angel Moroni, and they have an Angel Moroni at the top of every Mormon temple. And he's blowing a trumpet. It's like to bring in the last days, basically. It's a trump. Anyway, so this earthquake came through, and he lost the trumpet. Like, the trumpet fell. It actually fell off. It was dislodged, and it fell. And
all right. Well, it's like the
construction zone below.
The lightning bolt hitting the Vatican the day Ratzinger is on, or the tornado after we did the exorcism. I mean, these things are not accidental, you know. And
This is a very huge. It is symbolic, you know, and the way that the LDS Church came back with this was like, well, see how important it is. This doubly shows how important it is to do these renovations. And I'm like, yeah. And the rest of us that know what's going on is kind of like, you guys are being called out. This is
okay,
ending. You know, your Trump is not going to happen.
Let's go back to the point about the block committees, because this is a very important thing people can do. A, it's breaking the quarantine. It's saying, look, we're not afraid. We're reaching out to our neighbors. Secondly, you say you create an infrastructure there. You can say, here's how we protect each other. Going to one neighbor and sitting down and overcoming this fear is going to have a reciprocal effect way beyond your numbers. You know, we've learned this. And we learn not through talking. We learn through engaging. And then we, from a hard lesson, not speculating, not being afraid, but learning what happens in practice when we say, okay, we're going to form a committee. We're going to defend ourselves so that there's 5 of us or 10 of us to say no to the cop if they come to our door. And they will back down. Cops are just go by they're very stupid. They're very regulation bound. And if you confront them, they back off. We find this time and again. So there's no need to hide in a hole. We can resist on a community level.
Well, I'm thinking about even the children, the way Brenda was talking about this. I mean, children are abused in their own homes. You know, that was my case as well. And how powerful would that be if I see a group of people that have gathered on, you know, as I was a child, you know, gathered on the front lawn and saying, something is happening there that is wrong, and we're watching this. We're watching you, and we will not put up with that. That is so empowering for the children. I mean, that gives them courage to even to say something or have a glimmer of hope. I mean, when you're in an abuse situation, you are a individual that is in a situation like that. Even domestically abused adults, you know, to know that there are people that are like, we've got your back, like, we're watching, that changes dynamics.
It does everything. It changes everything. Brenda, what are your thoughts?
I'm just glad it's, you know, being received well, because it really does, it is, it's up to us. These agencies, the police, they're, as this situation unfolds, they're going to get busier and busier, or say that they are, and there won't be responses from the system, because it is being set up to collapse, and those of us smart enough to see it know that this unrest and system collapse is just going to increase, you know, and as people, they realistically, if you didn't have the money, you don't have a lot of supplies in your homes. So eventually we are going to have to come out and feed each other, you know.
Right, and that's how my mom always tells me, that's how they all survived the Great Depression. Nobody had money. Everybody had to feed each other in their neighborhood. And here's how we say to people, look, the way we legitimate what we're doing under our new jurisdiction is we say, things are going to collapse. We need to be united as a community to deal with it. That's something people can get on board about, right?
Mm-hmm. And each time that community meets, they get stronger and, you know, better and bigger ideas, and they just grow, and that's how we do it.
And we need to be the spark for that. Yes. Go ahead.
I do like that. I like that. I know that there's a challenge in this particular societal mindset, at least in the LDS culture, because the Mormons are very, very good at food storage. I mean, from the get-go, from the inception of this particular religious organization, you know, as soon as they got out to Utah, they were told it was part of the culture. I mean, food storage was huge. Huge. When I had the ability to, you know, when I was married, had a whole storage room full of food, and it was very, you know, like cataloged, and I had supplies that could, you know, for trading. I had fuel. I had all kinds of things, and a lot of people have that out here. But then what happens in some cases, and I know of some, you know, real cases where there are people that are like, I did my job. I listened to the prophet. I listened to God, and you didn't, so you don't get anything, which is going to be very interesting here.
I'm sorry to interrupt it. We've got 3 minutes, and I wanted a chance for a couple of announcements. But I appreciate what you're both saying. We'll carry this on, but I really want to emphasize to the listeners that you can take a step right now. Take back your mind. Do not react. We have a program. We have a whole way of operating to build up community organization to resist this thing. So write to us, a number of different emails, thecommonland@gmail.com, ITCCS office. At protonmail.com, ITCCS updates under murderbydecree.com. We're going to have these recent postings, you know, that Brenda referred to, these links. Also, if you want to start organizing on the ground with us through our new jurisdiction, you can take a citizenship in the Republic. We have local conveners in different regions of Canada that can deputize you as part of a common law sheriff movement. So those are the people on the ground who are going to be building up this movement, and I urge you to contact us to help do that. Any final words from either of you?
No, just good luck to everybody, and try to keep your vibrations high, because fear lowers our vibration, and that definitely helps to make us sick. So happy thoughts, no matter how scary things are, and just appreciate all the goodness around you, especially while it lasts.
I completely agree with that is exactly what I was going to say. Keep your thoughts, be conscious about what you're doing, what your observations are, and keep your vibration high.
Amen.
And a final note, too, that I am convinced that on the basis of how quickly they're trying to push this thing through, it's very unstable, that they are in a state of desperation. They've got an agenda that we don't know about, but they're under a time pressure. And people only do that when there's big money involved, and they're being ordered to do it. So if we start resisting, then we can throw this whole thing to pieces. But we've got to do it now. We can't wait till it's all secure. So
could
resistance now and independence is essential. Pardon?
I get insider emails from the UN and all this unfolding UN Agenda 2030, and they are nervous. They're telling each other that they have to do this very quickly and efficiently.
Right, and they can only do that with our cooperation. We're going to lock ourselves into our own mental concentration camps or homes. Do not do that. The more we resist,
when you need
the
air
more it's going to stop. Yep,
on
exactly.
You need your good help, so get air and sunlight too.
And vitamin C, tons of vitamin C and oil of oregano. I want to thank you both for being on. We're going to carry it on. Everyone out there, Stay strong, stay clear. We'll be back. We're going to end on a very important song by Phil Oakes, 60s folk protest singer, When I'm Gone. It's kind of a message of how we got to act now, folks, not tomorrow. Carry it on, folks. We'll be back next week. Stay strong, stay clear.